As Hudson deals, swung on and hit in the air to left field and deep. That ball is high. That is far. That is gone. It's a grand slam. Anthony Volpe put a charge in one. A grand slam to left field, and the Yankees now take a 5-2 lead.
Redemption after the base running. John Sterling with a call on Yankees radio, and New York is still alive for Game 5 tonight. 11-4 Yankees after the base running, the grand slam, fan ejection. This game had a lot.
It did. That base running, I'm a stickler for it, Sean. You don't tag from second with one out like that. I don't get it. But very disappointed in that call because there was no nickname. There was nothing like that. Yeah, I thought that there was going to be something. That's his shtick. That's what he does. But there wasn't that. But now what you do is now you get a game five, and you've got Gerrit Cole tonight against Jack Flaherty. And Flaherty is, I mean, he pitched pretty well in game one. This was actually a well-pitched game one that, you know, Gerrit Cole really pitched well in and probably should have stayed in the game, but he didn't. And now they got a chance to make this go to six, and that would get even more ratings because, as Bobby said, it did beat Monday Night Football.
Let's go to Odyssey Baseball Insider. He is up earlier than normal. Are you in a parking garage or a parking lot, Brett Boone?
Parking lot. There's some golfing going on today.
Okay.
Oh,
man's got to live, doesn't he?
He does have to. He does have to live. Honestly, did you think it was over for your brother's team when Freddie hit another home run early on?
You know, I said before that, I've been down 3-0 before. 1999, my Braves, and we were a good team, and we just caught the Yankees, a really tough Yankee team, and they were playing well, and we just were flat. We're down 3-0, and one thing about players is, if anything, we're naive. You know, when the outside, when reality is setting in and it looks to the rest of us like you're down 3-0, it's over. It's never been happened. It's never happened before in the history of the World Series coming back from that. As a player, I'll guarantee it, they came to the yard yesterday, to the ballpark, and thought, nope, we're going to win. We got a chance to do it. We're gonna do it. That's the way we're wired until the obvious sets in. Yeah, for us, it was mid-game, game four. When Freeman hit that home run, I just thought, if they don't answer pretty quickly, that dugout's going to get real dismal. Well, they ended up answering, scratching, clawing back. Then Volpe hits the huge home run. And then it was like a completely different team for the rest of the game. Now, I realize they didn't go to their high leverage bullpen guys because they were down and they were thinking, we got to save these guys for future games. But I'll tell you, I'm not saying that they have a chance. It's never been done before. But I saw a complete – I don't know if it was just me – but I saw a completely different Yankee team the second half of the game yesterday than I've seen the entire series. I haven't even seen a little bit of the enthusiasm that they had. The bottom of the lineup finally came through. You allowed a lot of things to happen yesterday, even letting Torres hit the late homer and Weaver not to have to come out and pitch the ninth. The little things like that, really, everything just went in the Yankees' favor yesterday, and then look to today. Now you got your ace back on the hill and Gerrit Cole. So it was about as good a day as I think the Yankees could have possibly had to put them, just to give them some hope, because you were getting to the point. Freeman hits that homer yesterday. It's like, can it get any worse than this?
Well, you mentioned Freeman. A, how do you pitch to him? And B, why do you pitch to him, I guess, is that in this situation?
Yeah. I wouldn't pitch him. I at this point, okay, as a hitter, you hit so many balls out. Freeman's hit every ball out except for the one yesterday, but it's just a rolling slider out over the plate. Everything's been high at velocity, some cut, and close to him. He's hit him out three times. Now, what do you think he's going to be looking for? Well, they've come in three times, and I've hit three homers. They're probably going to try to spin something away or throw something away. So his eyes are out over the plate. You give him what he wants. He hits another one. Now, I'm not saying it's that easy, but right now, Freddie's one of the best hitters in the world. And now you put him in the zone where he's hot. Yeah, I wouldn't mess with Freddie right now in any high leverage situation unless there's nobody on. It's like, why pitch to him right now?
Brett Boone is joining us, Odyssey Baseball Insider on the D&M Leasing Hotline. How many times have you interacted with Aaron since the series started?
Zero. I have left him alone. Well, interact. You mean interact for me is a phone call.
Okay.
I sent him a text last night, kind of a way to hang in there, you know, and get one.
But so if there's a baseball observation that's screaming off the TV to you, you're not going to relay.
Oh, absolutely. No, I will.
Okay.
Right away.
Okay.
Right away. So that's what I'll do. It's just, you know, you're down three. The family's all at the game in L.A. I wasn't. My father wasn't. But all the kids were up there. Aaron's kids were up there. And it was kind of a grim 2 days for him in L.A. And then you go home and you lose the third. It's like, what am I going to say right now? You know, I feel bad. I want to tell him to hang in there, but it's like he doesn't want to hear from anybody probably at that point. So there's points in the season where I pick my spots and leave them alone. If they're going through a rough spot, you know, leave them alone. If they're hot as a firecracker, I leave them alone because I will be responsible if they go south once I make a phone call. So I pick my spots when they, you know, they've kind of won like, Four out of seven.
Yeah.
That's a good time to call.
What do you think he's been telling Judge, if anything? Is it leave him alone? He's the freaking MVP. Overcoach Correct. It. What do you think he's been telling Judge?
No, believe me, if anybody knows what's going on. And by the way, I've got to say, I really appreciate the way Judge has handled this whole thing. He's been upbeat. Listen, when you're the guy, when you're the man in the middle of that lineup and everybody looks to you as you know, as much star power as the Yankees have, that focal point and the man is still Aaron Judge. So when he's gone as bad as you can, he's the best hitter on the planet. When it's gone this bad, to remain poised and to have a smile on your face after being down 0-3 and can't get a hit. I mean, he's looked as bad as I've ever seen. The way he's handled himself, I thought it's been tremendous. I mean, because the troops look to you. It's like being on a plane. You look to that, there's turbulence, and you're going to look at that flight attendant, and if she's panicking, you're going to panic. Yeah. If she's smiling and saying everything's going to be all right. I think that was really important for Aaron Judge to be stoic like that. It's been as smooth a transition from the Jeter, you know, captain thing to him. I think he's been great. And another thing that happened last night,
the base hit
that game, Aaron Judge got a base hit.
Yep.
That's all it is. He's going to sleep last night, being able to sleep like, yep. All right, maybe there was something there. And those are the little things mentally in the game of baseball that aren't talked about too much, but they're ultra important. Verdugo, he hit two ground balls yesterday for RBIs. You think not a big deal, huge deal. Because if he doesn't hit those ground balls, it's not tied 2-2 early. And he was 0-2 in that situation. It's just the little things like that that really – they went to bed last night with pep in their step. Think about if you lose game one and then you lose three in a row and you got a pack today in case you win, you're really lacklusterly packing. You're down 0-3 and then you win the way you did last night. Man, those guys went home and they had a smile on their face packing going, not – we're going to go to LA.
Yeah.
So that's the whole flip on the mental side and just what one game can do to you. And it was pretty evident to me. I watched just the demeanor, the body language completely change.
Well, it's like Millar said, he said, don't let us get this one. Don't let us win one, because they're thinking now we're winning tonight with Cole. Now, all the pressure in the world, game six is the wild card. All the pressure in the world is going to be on the Dodgers. Back home, they have to win it. They're supposed to win it. Game six is the other wild card. And then game seven, anything can happen. That's what I would be the guess, Bobby.
Yeah, and Brett, that's one of the things that I was curious about was that, you know, you were in the 99 NLCS, and you guys with the Braves had gone up 3-0 on the Mets. And then the Mets came back, win two more, push game six to an extra innings game. for the Dodgers' perspective, we talk about the Yankees and the kind of momentum they're getting. For the Dodgers' perspective, how much do you think they start feeling doubt creep in if the Yankees are able to take Game 5? And, okay, well, now it's 3-2, and they've got momentum. And what did you guys experience when the Mets pushed it to Game 6?
Well, I think you get to, you know, last night, it's, come on, they're the Yankees, they're the best team in the American League this year. Yeah, they've got to win one game, you would figure, with that, lineup, with that roster. Okay, so you win one. Dodgers right now aren't thinking anything. They're thinking, yeah, Cole, but hey, our guy Flaherty last time, he went out, he matched Cole pitch for pitch. So we're not worried. Now you lose tonight, you know, we really didn't want to go back to L.A. Now, Game 6, if it got to a point where it's a game and the Yankees led at any point, that's when a little panic will start to creep in for the Dodgers. But until then, Dodgers still, you know, sitting in the catbird seat right now, probably not worried about much and really like the way they sit and like the way their team's playing. You know, it was one night. They still scored four runs. Freddie Freeman still hit another home run. You know, Mookie Betts got a big hit. They're still lined up pretty good. That Dodger team, I saw the biggest change in the postseason out of all the teams I was watching, both leagues, was when they were down 2-1 to the San Diego Padres, and I thought the Padres were a better team this year. I really did. They came back. They tied it up 2-2. Ever since that game, the Dodgers have been the best team, I think, in the postseason. They've done it in unorthodox ways. They've done it with bullpen games that no one's ever done before. They pitched four shutouts in the postseason, three with bullpen games. They've gotten so many contributions for everybody in the lineup. That lineup's been so deep, all the way down to Kike Hernandez and Edmund hitting the big home runs, driving in big runs. And that's been the difference in this series, I think, is the Dodgers lineup has been so deep. And until last night, you've gotten zero production, not only from Judge, from the bottom half of that lineup. So all around, really good day, really good night for the Yankees. But still, their back's about as far up against the wall as possible.
Yeah, and the Dodgers have been really unbeatable basically since Lindor, the Buehler got the strikeout of Lindor, the base is loaded.
Right.
They moved Stanton down in the lineup. They replaced and they moved Chisholm to four. Why would they have done that? And is that something that goes from the organization and not necessarily from the manager in that situation?
Well, I think nowadays it's a lot different, obviously, than 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's an organizational type decision where it's not just one person making the decision. And this is what I'm guessing. You know, I never get into the X's and O's with Aaron about it. I kind of don't want to know because I don't like it. I like the manager being the manager and his coaching staff coming to an agreement on what the best lineup is that day. Yes, with the new data and the analytics, I think you'd be foolish if you didn't consider those. Give me all the information and I'll make the lineup out. No, I think it was nothing more than just breaking up the righty lefty. I thought, I was asked yesterday, what do you think Aaron would do with a Judge Soto situation? I said, well, you're not going to drop Judge down. Judge has been there all year. Like you mentioned earlier, he's the MVP. If anything, I would have switched because I don't think Juan Soto at this point is kind of unflappable. He's that guy that's just kind of locked in at all times and nothing would really affect him. If you made any move, I was thinking, flip Soto and Judge to give Judge a little more protection with Juan behind him. Aaron decided not to do that. And just splitting up the Stanton and the left-handed hitter, that's all it was. And it wasn't a big deal, and I'm sure Stanton wasn't affected by it at all. You've got to consider when you're changing lineups where your stars and where your most productive players are comfortable. And by changing the lineup, how that would affect them. We're all different. We're all individuals. That's the manager's job that lives with these guys for 162 games. Because if you change one guy in the lineup, it might affect him differently. He might roll over and not really be that guy you need him to be. Whereas you flip somebody else in the lineup, that doesn't bother them, and they're still the same guy. You got to know your guys because that's important. That's important. You can't treat everybody the same. This isn't you know, college baseball where everybody's same and you got to be on time and you got to do that. No, this is the big leagues, and everybody isn't the same. So you've got to pick and choose. It's about managing people. And I think Aaron just made a little tweak. Really not a big deal, just breaking up that righty-righty.
That Manning cast thing you did with Chipper Jones and Piazza, that was freaking cool. Yeah. That was awesome. Enjoy the rest of the series, and thanks for making time.
You got it, guys. I might do it. Might do it again, Game Six, with a new cast, four new guys. So okay. We'll see.
It was awesome.
They got to get to Game Six.
Yeah, they got to get to Game
Six. Thanks, guys.
Enjoy the links. There he is, our boy, Odyssey Baseball Insider Brett Boone on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Why isn't Nick Eatman protecting Micah Parsons and Trayvon Diggs? We'll ask him next from DallasCowboys.com. Let's bring in Dallas Cowboys insider Nick Eatman from the Ford Center at the Star in Frisco, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the official casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. Good morning, Nick. How are you, sir?
Good. Good, John.
Is my headphones cutting out, or was that Nick's phone cutting out?
It was Nick's phone for a sec, but he's there now.
Let's try it again. You good?
I'm good.
All right. I want to play this local media clip for you and get your reaction. This is the perspective from Micah and Trayvon Diggs talking about how they are covered here in DFW on the Edge.
It almost seems like your media is painting a worse picture than anybody else out there. You know what I'm saying? Because they basically got the up close look, and they kind of, you know, I kind of seen last night that, you know, some of our media staff was saying this is the worst team chemistry and team morale that they seen since Colt. But how would they know that if they only in a locker room for, you know, an hour throughout the week? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just weird to me that your team's media is like trying to portray an image about you, or trying to like throw dirt on your name or throw dirt on your team's name. Like, we supposed to be one. We supposed to be together. I know that's journalism, and, you know, they got to report what they report, but at the end of the day, you should be trying to protect us, if anything, you know, not trying to be buddy-buddy with you, smile in your face, trying to talk to you, then talking about you online. Like, just don't talk to me. Like, we don't got to talk at all. Like, I don't need to do interviews with you. You want to ask me something, we can talk on the podcast, and we could figure it out on our own.
What do you think, Nick?
Well, I mean, it's the second time where I feel like there's, you know, players maybe don't kind of understand who the media is, and, like, you know, team media or whatever. I mean, like, some of that, I've had that issue in the past where, you know, but we actually are team media. So, I mean, I could see where certain players were like that. But in this particular case, I'm not sure. It felt like Trayvon thinks that who he was talking to is actually with the team.
Yeah.
And so there may be needs to be a little bit more of an understanding of kind of who's out there and who's actually in the locker room and things like that. But, you know, it just seems like these are the things that happen when you lose games, and, you know, like everyone's kind of, you know, it's just frustrated. Everyone's frustrated about a lot of things. And then you're talking about things that don't have to do with football. And so it kind of happens a lot. But I didn't hear a lot of that conversation.
How harsh do you think the local media is with the Cowboys? I mean, you're obviously traveling to every single game.
Yeah.
I know you're not listening to all the sports talk when you land, right, in the other cities. But, you know, you get a feel for it. Or I like to compare it to national. Like, I feel like the national media is much, much harsher on the Cowboys than the local media is. At least the people who, like, cover the team are out at the – I mean, I think we're pretty harsh. We can be harsh. But if you're out there every single day, you know, you maybe toe a little bit more of a line when you're in that locker room. How harsh do you think – the local media is with them?
I don't think it's considered harsh.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot to go off of when it comes to other teams and how they're covered. Obviously, this is kind of the only place that I've been. I you know, you kind of do get the sense that it's a little tougher in other areas, but I think you're right when it comes to, like, if you're in the locker room every day and you're there, it's not going to be, you know, it's going to be toned down a little bit more. I think what makes this tough for the Cowboys is just that, you know, they're fighting someone else's fight a lot of the time, because it's the frustration of, I mean, I said it the other day. I mean, how many times do we hear the number 29? We hear it all the time, because that's what the frustration is how long it's been since they've won that. And that, again, I call that someone else's fight. That's not what this team is battling, but every play, every loss, every interception kind of gets thrown onto that. So the expectations, and hey, that's part of it. That's why we have so many shows. That's why I have a job. That's why, you know, I get that. But that is the reality, is the expectations are so high for this team, and you know, sometimes higher than they can meet, because, you know, it's just, this has been a tough year.
Nick Eatman, join us here at 105 through the Fan. How long before the players really push to not have media in the locker room anymore?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, I feel like it's coming, because it's the door was opened kind of from the NFLPA and all that. And so I see it happening, but you know, there's going to be a gray area too. Like what's the locker room? Is it going to be just outside the locker room? You know, there'll still be media access and things like that, but just kind of how it's done might change a little bit. But you know, I mean, as we found out Sunday night, you know, sometimes the players will find the media. So like, I don't know. I don't know how all that's going to go, but yeah, I think this is probably not new when the season's not going like you want. You know, some of these things happen. But, you know, listening to that clip makes me wonder, you know, if Trayvon, you know, didn't really understand who the people were that were talking and kind of what their role is.
Nick, we didn't get the wrinkles that we were hoping for, maybe, in the return from the bye week against the 49ers. Is this the week against the Falcons where we see the offense finally try some different things?
I would hope so. I mean, I know that they tried a new running back and that he didn't get a lot of carries there. I mean, I would think so. I would think, you know, if they're there, I mean, if they've got him. We saw some things on special teams that didn't work. That kind of backfired on some of the, you know, the wrinkles that you're talking about. Something's got to work. Something's got to change, you know, and I keep harping on it, but it's just, I can't believe the starts of these games. I just can't believe how bad they've been on both sides of the ball. And that kind of goes to prep work. That goes to what they're doing in the middle of the week and the practice and all that. To give up a score every single time that the team starts a game or a half is that's ridiculous, really. And so that's something that's got to be fixed. So as far as like the wrinkles and things like that, it seems that the core work, the base stuff, still needs to be ironed out as well.
Jerry, I don't know if you're getting this on all your shows. We get it every time a team makes a move. The Cowboys get mocked. Jerry explained to us in his own way a couple weeks ago why no one was added in the offseason. How would you explain, if you agree or you can explain to Cowboy fans, why moves most likely are not going to be made right now before the deadline?
Well, I think if they don't get made, then, you know, that obviously, I know this is more of a baseball thing, but that obviously kind of goes to show about where teams, you know, think they are about, you know, pushing forward for this season versus what they have to give up down the road. It doesn't mean you're giving up. It just doesn't mean that you're going to dip into next year's pool of resources. And I think that's the biggest thing here, is that as bad as it is this year, cap wise and all that, I think next year's cap seems to be a lot tougher, and it's even going to be harder. And so that means that they have to rely on these draft picks more than ever. So just to lose next year's third or fourth to get a guy that might be able to help right now, but it'll probably take a few weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, to get in the mix, doesn't make a lot of sense when next year you've got to use all of your capital, all your resources that you can, to try to build a strong enough roster as possible.
So, Nick, then with that thought that things are going to be tight and you need that capital, is there any scenario you can envision where if somebody picks up the phone and says, we want somebody from you, that they would entertain that and look for draft capital?
I think so. I mean, if it makes sense to them, and if they feel like they've got guys that they can, you know, replace there, and you get the value that you're looking for. I mean, I'm sure that you know, that could happen. I don't feel like I've seen that a lot here. I mean, obviously everyone knows the big one with Herschel, but I mean, I'm talking about even in recent years, I can't remember a time where they did that, where it kind of looks like, all right, well, you know, they're kind of looking towards the future a little bit more. I just haven't seen that move happen. I'm not saying that they couldn't or shouldn't, but I haven't. That doesn't seem like something that they've done a lot.
What do you think the spread is or should be for this game in Atlanta?
I haven't seen it. I would say I don't know, 4.5.
3. Falcons by 3.
So this is the 8th game of the year. How many times? I mean, that's what's funny is that the Cowboys are 3-4, and it's like, you know, this is a disappointing season so far, and it has been. But I mean, they've been the underdog. Was it like 6 times now this year? Even Cleveland, they were the underdog. Yeah, I think all but the Saints and the Giants, I believe. And the Saints, obviously, they should have been, but. Well, I don't know. Actually, the Saints are so weird. Like that, it's been such a weird league, and that loss just looks worse and worse now. But yeah, I mean, they haven't been the favorite in a lot of these games.
Wow.
You know, that's just kind of the way that it is. And so, as sad as it sounds, when you look at the way they're running the ball, which is not at all, and then the way they're not, you know, stopping the run, the way that they're starting these games, every game has been a tough start. You know, it's in being underdogs in every game, but a couple. I mean, 3-4 record is actually a little bit surprising when you look at it. When you look at it, it's almost like it feels a lot worse.
Yeah,
and you can see the writing on the wall that it could be. So I'm not trying to say it's not as bad. I'm just saying when you look at everything as it is and the opponents that they've played and all the injuries that they've had and all the pass rushers that they're facing and all this stuff. I mean, like it kind of adds up.
Nick, I got a quick trivia question for you. Like Babe Laufenberg, you know who led the 1992 Cowboys in sacks when they won that Super Bowl?
Was it Jeffcoat?
No. Jim Jeffcoat, wow. Who's our guest tonight on Cowboys Crosstalk, Nick.
Nice.
We'll have Jim Jeffcoat along with Alec Medford and Nate Newton. We'll be hanging out at Cowboys Club, but that'll be 7 o'clock on 105 Through the Fan and on the DallasCowboys.com platforms.
Hey, Jim Jeffcoat, 4 touchdowns in his career, and his record was broken by Deron Bland, wow, who had 5 last year, but he had 4 touchdowns for a big defensive lineman. That's pretty impressive.
Awesome stuff, brother. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. See you guys.
Nick Eatman every single hump day here on Sean and RJ. It's 105.3 The Fan. Let's crosstalk and talk about those 2 meatballs at the World Series last night with the KMC Masterpiece next.
Timer is down to 5. Doncic can't find any space. 3 seconds. 2. Deep one. Doncic!
Oh, my gosh.
Bingo!
The greatest offensive backcourt in NBA history, according to Stan Van Gundy, gets the win over Minnesota again. Another Luka Wolves dagger. They get the W. It's Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan, TNT with the call. Good morning, Corey Majors. What's coming up?
We do have Trey Wingo joining us today at 11:20, and then we scout the Falcons at 10:20, and talk about last night's game at 10 o'clock, right out of the gate. That was the moment,
Which game?
Like the Mavs game, obviously.
Oh,
the,
wow.
In
your face.
No,
I thought you were the baseball show record.
Listen, I am in a combative mood already. And this is a bad time to be on radio. I said the dumbass thing yesterday, and I feel bad about it.
What?
Kind of. But
so, I made a mistake.
Are you mad at Kevin?
No. I made a mistake about Alex Highsmith.
Are you embarrassed?
I was. And I didn't realize it was a mistake until Broadus came in when we went to the commercial break.
Oh, is that before y'all's little trial thing that you thought was so funny?
Oh, we're going to do that.
In a second.
Didn't you learn your lesson about bits last time you did one?
That's a good point. That is a very good point.
I'm proud
of
you, Sean.
I have no more to say on this matter.
Yeah.
But this guy sent in, I'm not kidding, 14 text messages. Because he was like, here's his salary this year. Here's his salary next year.
About what, though?
About Alex Highsmith being on the Steelers this whole time. And he's like, you're embarrassing yourself. Why are you not correcting this? And then we corrected it. And then he sent in 8 more text messages about, like, how you should be ashamed of yourself. And I was like, we already corrected it. And he was like, you guys suck.
Okay.
So, yeah. So
what did you mess up exactly? You said he's on the Falcons?
Yeah. I said that Alex Highsmith was picked up off the practice squad, and I meant the guy he abused was from a sports perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Like, beat him.
Clarify.
Yes.
With this sport.
Right? Was the guy who was picked up off the practice squad.
So how did that set you off?
Reading it, and he just kept going in, and I was like, we just did it. Yeah. Like, we just corrected it. So now the thing that's happened recently, though, some point, I guess my kid decided to go to bed at 1 o'clock last night, and his room is right next to ours, and he's slamming doors, and I woke up. And then at one point, Adrian moved her pillow and hit me in the face, and I never went back to sleep. So I've been up since 1 o'clock. I'm really kind of edgy right now. So a lot of things could really – I've been a smart-ass to Adrian all morning, and I'm – you know what? And I said I would stop saying the A word. I'm done with that, too.
Adrian?
Feels like a classic Mike and Corey blow-up.
So this could be – yeah, this could be one of those days.
Are you that light of a sleeper that the pillow
– I am a light sleeper. When we go to Oxnard and stuff, like – it didn't help that they played Cotton Eye Joe in Vegas for like an hour straight. They were doing a cocaine party above me. But when we go to Oxnard, I have trouble sleeping. So I'll figure it out, though.
Because you didn't like our mock trial idea?
I love this idea. I think it's great. You guys
got a lot of time to fill during Peace-a-thon. We call surprise witnesses. Yeah. I've already heard some of the surprise witnesses proposed.
Oh.
It's not a real trial. We don't have any binding power.
Oh. It was. I chuckled. Oh. Tiafalo had a funny line.
Sean's got the star witness on his side, I already know. So.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I don't know about that.
Oh, I do.
I heard there's precedent for this kind of issue.
Can you get the baby to talk? The baby's the star witness.
That's true.
Too much water. And
oh, my God.
My dad dropped me.
Jesus. Holy.
Somebody help.
Eliza, what is wrong with y'all?
I can scar a kid, though, you know?
Yes!
There's a story from my parents that we were in Padre, and I was like 2 or 3 years old, and I just jumped in the pool, and my dad's best friend jumps in, and his head's underwater, and he's holding me and his beer above his head. He didn't want to spill the beer.
Well, sounds
what
like
kind
like
of beer was it? I don't know, Miller Lite.
Sounds
probably.
Like some a fan
it's
would
got
do.
Water in it.
Right, it was Miller Lite. Yeah, wasn't it?
I'm segueing to the fan in the stands.
They try to rip Mookie Betts glove off?
What is that about? He tried to snap his arm,
then
too.
Then you want to punch that guy in the face.
Yes.
That set Bobby off in a New York state of mind.
It did.
You could try to get the foul ball, but you can't, like, actively interfere with the player.
He's trying to untie
it. I think you're going to get ejected.
It was objectively hilarious that he grabs it. He tries to, like, pry it open.
He succeeded.
I mean, what's going on here?
Now.
That's amazing.
It's out. It's not in anymore.
Like, imagine spending all that money and you're gone. You watch a half inning.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, though. Yankee fans are jackasses.
Sure.
They just are.
That's true.
Like, going back to Jeffrey Mayer into the one who interfered with Nelson Cruz during the ALCS and then flipped him off in his face, and these guys last night. This is just who they are.
Mayer just a kid at the time?
And he was a jackass.
Okay.
Dude, there was somebody who tweeted after the interference in game one, said, I grew up playing baseball with Jeffrey Mayer. Let me just tell you, he loved being Jeffrey Mayer.
Yeah, of course.
The Mike Leslie of little fans.
Oh, wow.
Gosh.
He was like a D3.
That's what Bobby says.
He was like a D3.
That's what everybody
player.
Says. Ask any player or media member.
What's the age when you could start calling somebody a jackass?
12 years old and, robbing B.J. Surhoff or whoever it was that was under there.
It was Tony Tarasco.
Whoever.
Don't forget, today is the last chance to grab a G-Bag Nation flag 2-7 in Grand Prairie, right in front of the Walmart Super Center. So that's going to be 2630 South State Highway, final Flagtober stop.
We did Buffalo Wild Wings in Grand Prairie on Friday, us in G-Bag, and it was packed. So I bet this will be busy today.
You're welcome.
I'm too old to say lit.
They don't say it anymore, right?
No.
Why did you look at RJ?
Because he knows.
I don't know.
He uses the words all the time.
Trayvon Diggs is still saying D's nuts.
They don't say lit anymore.
Yesterday when
they say
D's nuts.
They don't say lit anymore. They say Liddy.
Liddy. Yeah.
Do you have the dictionary, the updated dictionary, Choppy, of the words? I want to see if...
There was something yesterday when he asked about San Francisco yesterday. He said San Fran to Jerry, and it set me off for some reason. I was just like, finish it and say Frisco.
San Fran?
Does it ever bother you when Jerry says Missouri?
What about Tarika?
Tarika? What about Missouri? Because I've been told from people in Missouri that they say Missouri because Missouri sounds too much like misery.
Oh, Okay.
So, I don't know.
I actually had no idea about that.
I do have the words, Sean.
All right. What is this exactly?
These are the words that have been added to the dictionary for this year.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Touch grass.
Yes. Yeah, that means get out away from the video games, get outside.
That's touch grass. Go, that's touch not grass. One word,
is
though, it right?
It's something that, so the dictionary is no longer words, it's phrase. So like for you page is now a word of the dictionary.
Oh. That's multiple words though. They put phrase. Yeah. When did the dictionary become phrases?
Yeah.
When they needed to sell more dictionaries. That's what became phrases. Street corn.
Elote?
Yeah, I love elote.
No. Well, it's a noun. Grilled corn on the cob that is coated with a creamy spread.
Yeah,
elote.
But it's corn on the cob.
No.
It's elote.
Elote doesn't have to be in a cub.
Yeah,
it can yes, be it does.
No, it doesn't. White boy.
Yeah, white boy over here.
Let me tell you something here, okay? You eat elote, corn on the cob. You know what you have? I mean, you're walking around with food all over your face for the rest of the day. There's only one thing that will be smeared all over my face, and I can assure you, you don't digest it.
What is it?
No, don't ask that
question. Oh, my God.
Whoa. He
went Nepo baby is another one. Nepo baby.
Nepo baby. Yeah,
Nepo baby is another one. Yeah.
That applies to a lot of things.
How this did not make the dictionary before.
Including steakhouses.
But what is the one word you think of when someone puts their hand together like this?
Forget about
Italian.
It.
Yeah,
Italian what is the gesture. One word?
Forget about it.
Gabagool.
Gabagool. Yeah.
I don't think that, but I do think Italian.
Did you go when you went to the Jimmy's?
I went to Jimmy's, yeah.
What'd you think?
I'd been before. It had been a while, though.
Did it give you the feels? Did you get some gabagool?
I did not get any gabagool. You know what I got? I got about a dozen black and white cookies.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. You got to look to the cookie.
For racial harmony?
For racial harmony, you have to look to the cookie.
That's what he said in Seinfeld.
Yeah. Cash grab is another one. Shadow ban. Talk about this,
yeah.
Bobby.
Yeah, that happens.
Shadow
a lot.
Ban is another one.
The Rogan podcast.
It's in the video games a lot, too.
Other words.
You'll get the Derek Holland tweet sometime. Will you retweet my video? I think I'm shadow banned.
Other words. Late capitalism. We're going to get political here, Hagee. Late capitalism. Far left. Far right.
Far center.
And MAGA.
Far center.
Which side is that?
Amanda told me yesterday there was Trump sensitive. There's a something sensitive for everything now. Oh. Or Trump curious.
Oh,
Trump, there's something curious.
I don't
for
think
everything.
I like him, but yeah. I want to know more.
Simp.
They're eating the dogs.
What about spaz?
Spaz is not in there, but simp and riz and bussin were all added.
Bussin needs to go away. I hate that one.
It's bussin.
Yeah, my kids don't say that.
Bussin's
anymore.
A bussin word.
It's bussin on God. No,
but it's bussin. If it's a good word, it's bussin.
I'm in my 40s. I don't know most of
Addison
those words.
Screams at me whenever I say stuff like this. She hates it.
You guys were in a very intense voting discussion in the commercial break. Anything that could translate over to air?
I look at this strictly from a statistical point of view. So this
you're going to project the winner right here?
I mean, I can if you want. But it looks like...
Bobby's been doing it every break.
Have you?
Yeah.
I mean, Harris and Waltz have taken
Walls.
Over... Walls. Excuse me.
Yeah, that was a weird team.
Sorry. They have taken over more of a lead in Michigan, so now it's looking like that is more firmly entrenched in their camp, and they need it because, obviously, they trail in most of the battleground states.
These
so they need to pick up a couple more. Okay.
I think Hagee described it as garbage time scoring.
No, Dak voting.
No, I knew you were going to say that. You still haven't gotten to election day. How's it garbage?
I will say. I will say this. I did tell Hagee this during the break. I have already said I'm not voting. If I lived in Pennsylvania,
that'd be the most hot button thing said during the segment.
If I lived in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, North Carolina, I probably would vote then. If I lived in what I felt like was a battleground state.
Corey, here's my question that I've been asking the Tolos all morning long: how many other party votes did you have on your ballot? I'm asking you who you voted for, but whatever
two.
You are, how many?
Two.
Two. Kevin, I feel like yours could be like the highest of anyone.
Yeah, I thought I had.
Because you,
thought I had
you read
three.
Up on everybody and kind of go through your things.
Yes.
There.
I mean, look.
Who'd you say? The train conductor? That was the type?
Railroad commissioner. Oh, that was a big one for me. I wanted to make sure that I got that right.
So you
got to
get your railroads.
Important position. I think.
Don't get me started on
BNSF. I think
there
were only five different parties.
Five?
Yeah.
Okay. Because what I had said was they have effed this up so much that you go in, someone like me, and I'm just like, nope, like one side for everything.
Okay.
You know, it's like...
What about when there's a Does that, I've always been curious, if you just go straight ticket, does that just skip the races where it's like not, it's, there's not another party competing? Races.
What's that, say it again without Bobby interrupting, try to be funny?
Like, let's say you voted straight Republican, but there's uncontested Democrats in the race. Does it just skip over those, or
is that the, well, is there an option to go just straight to
there shit? Used to be I've never actually voted straight Republican or straight Democrat, so I'm not sure. I heard what you said.
Mike is here now. Do we want to ask him who he voted for?
Nope. The KMC masterpiece is next.
You afraid I'm gonna answer
right here on 105.3 The Fan?
I'm afraid of anything with you.